I'm Sheriff Rosie Rivera, and we are going to get started with the CJAC meeting. It's Wednesday, April 8th, and we're just going to go right into our agenda. So I do want to welcome everyone, and I hope you can all hear me. We do have a chat box, so if you have any questions, put it in the chat box, and JoJo or Tucker will make sure that I get those questions answered for you. We're going to start by approval of the minutes, so I will need a motion from someone to approve the minutes, and then we'll need a second.
Judge McCullough, so move.
Second, Bradley.
Okay, are there any opposed to approving the minutes? Okay, it sounds like we can go ahead with that, and the minutes are approved. We're going to go into our COVID-19 response and interim updates. So I'm going to update on the law enforcement side, and so is Chet Ellis. So Chet, it looks like you're first on our slide. So if you want to comment.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Sheriff. Can you, everybody hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, yes. Great. So two things. First of all, I'm Chet Ellis. I'm the operations section chief here at the Emergency Coordination Center for the county. And I just wanted to update you all on a couple of things that are new and have changed since the last time we chatted. So we do have an intelligence branch within our operation here. And what they are doing currently and have done, and you'll be seeing it very soon, is created a dashboard. And what that dashboard is trying to do is to allow all of us to see kind of what the PPE levels are throughout the county and also staffing levels. Not super detailed, but it would allow you all to see as far as full staffing, partial staffing, how many are sick or how many are in quarantine and isolation throughout the county, as well as some of the basic PPE inventory totals. That way we all kind of have eyes on what's going on throughout the county. Now the way they're going to gather that information is the PPE status will go, so the city emergency managers every day will receive a link, basically a survey, and they'll fill that in. The initial one's going to be a little bit more complicated, or I see a little bit more work involved, because they're going to have to kind of go through and fill in some of those numbers, and then every day they can just kind of update that. And if there's no change, then they can just hit the no change box. That just information gets sent back to our intelligence section. They can then populate that dashboard in real time so everybody can see it day to day, kind of where we're at as far as PPE goes. Same thing will go with the staffing. I'm trying to figure out right now if that will be the same length and it will funnel through the city EMs, or if it will go directly to you police chiefs. But in either case, there will be also an updated daily staffing as far as how we look. And then that actual link, so you can view that, will be sent to every police chief. So there's that going on right now. And also I wanted to update you. We mentioned last time about alternate housing option. And we actually just submitted the plan to Unified Command this morning, and it was approved. So we are going to go forward with that plan. Basically what it is allowing or providing a hotel room option for anyone who finds themselves in a circumstance where they cannot travel home after shift, mainly due to their family status, meaning if they live with somebody that's a more of a vulnerable population or immunocompromised or anything like that. So we will be reaching out to every agency, law enforcement, fire, and EMS, to figure out exactly who their agency rep will be. All the requests will funnel through that individual. Then they will come to us and we'll fill that request and put that individual in a room. We have two hotels that we're using for this alternate housing, one in downtown Salt Lake, the other one in South Jordan. And then we also have a separate hotel that will be downtown that will be our quarantine and isolation. So if we do have any first responders that need that quarantine and isolation and cannot do it at home for whatever reason, we can provide them a room as well. So that's exciting for us. I mean, it'll be huge for our folks. The last thing we need is for them to be dealing with that stressors at home or not being able to go home in the first place. So be looking for those emails. And again, we'll identify for each of your agencies who that agency rep will be. We'll work with them. We'll get all that documentation sent over the next day or two. so you can see how it's going to work. And then we're planning to go live Monday morning. We're just trying to get the contracts with the hotels in place and all of that done, and as well as the meal plans for those who need to be in quarantine and isolation. So those are the two big things for me. Any questions on either of those things?
There's a question from Mike Haddon. Okay. The reserved hotel rooms be available to DOC staff?
So basically the way we've worded it, and honestly, we're going to leave this up to the agencies to kind of help decide, because we've had kind of a lot of, I don't want to call them one-off what ifs, but you know, we've had questions about security guards and things like that. So according to our documentation, the way we worded it is eligibility would go to firefighters, EMS, and law enforcement employees who are operationally based in Salt Lake County, as well as Salt Lake County employees who are directly involved in the COVID outreach and response efforts. So with that said, if you consider them a law enforcement person, we're okay with that. So we can't really dive down into every single scenario, but we're going to leave that up to the agency rep. If they feel like it meets it and they've got the need, then we will definitely consider it. Does that answer your question?
I think it does. Thank you.
Jojo, are there any more questions?
I don't see any other questions for Chet.
Okay, and then I will talk a little bit about the law enforcement side, mainly just the UPD side of the house. So we are out and about doing our regular duties, but with the social distancing, we are enforcing it and educating people, communicating, and warning them. We have not had to write any citations as of yet I don't believe we're going to have to. It seems like the community has been very, very supportive and just following the rules. So that's the only update we have right now. We are working with the Unified Command to try to get more PPE. We did receive some this week, so we're doing well there. But as you know, it may not last if we get harder in the community. So we're going to continue to order outside of the stockpile as well, but that's where law enforcement for the UPD is. Does anybody have any questions on that?
Rosie, Jim Bradley, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I just had a question on the canyons. You know, the anecdotal reports are that there's not a heck of a lot of social distancing going on in the canyons. Is your feedback confirm that or not?
I have not heard that there's a problem up there. The canyons are pretty large, and you know, we haven't heard of any issues up there with the social distancing. Now, you know, it may be a family that are not keeping the distance of, you know, 6 feet apart, but that's pretty hard to enforce with a family. So we're not, you know, going out and trying to break that up, but we haven't seen a problem.
All right. Well, that's good to hear. Yeah. Some of the reports that I have heard is that, you know, because it's open space, that's where people are attracted to, and with the trailheads and the trails themselves and the parking lots, that those do fill up fairly easily, as we know. So just keeping track of that. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, let's move on to the community supervision. I'm not sure who was going to present on that one. Jojo, can you help me?
This is Keely. I'm online. I just wanted to let everybody know that we've temporarily moved our pretrial screeners from the jail to our main office on 13th South and 145 East. We're still operating 24/7. We're just doing everything remotely. Wanted to thank the sheriff's team for being willing to help us make those little minor changes to keep everybody safe, including our staff, the sheriff's staff, and the inmates that are getting booked in. And then as far as the community supervision for clients we have, we're doing our best to keep them engaged and supported during this process. Next week, we are going to be offering online classes to help bridge some of the gaps between treatment and our inability to have them come into the office. And those are my updates. Questions?
Just a quick note about questions. If you can't see the screen, like you're calling in, you can submit your questions via text message. If you just send a text to 801-318-1648, just include your name and what your question is, and then I can read it out here. And Keely, it does look like there's a question. What kind of online classes?
We're going to be offering Seeking Safety, Courage to Change, and some other behavioral-based classes.
Okay, any more questions for Keely?
Yeah, sure. If I have one, will clients need to, this is Rich Morrow, will clients need, Keely, will clients need to have some sort of internet service or a computer to do that? And is there any availability for those that don't have those devices available?
They can also call in with a cell phone. Unfortunately, for those online classes, they do need to have some type of ability to call in or remote in. If they don't have ability to do the online classes, we're still providing homework directly with the case manager and the client, where we can email them the information, have those phone calls, have them fill out the forms. We can fill it out for them if there's a barrier for their language or their ability to read and write. We can do those via that way.
All right, Keely, I have a couple more. So of those classes, are any of those DV?
Right now, they're not DV classes. We can look into doing some anger management. We're really going to rely on our partners in the community for domestic violence. I also see another question, if all the classes are available to all of our drug court and criminal justice involved individuals. They are. They're open to anybody who's referred to our agency, and there's no cost to those classes.
Awesome. And then the last question I see is about those classes, which judges could order people to do pretrial?
Any judge can order anybody to do pretrial.
Okay. Okay. And I think that's all the questions I see then.
Okay. Then let's move on with the agenda and jail operations, Chief Matt DeMont.
Can you guys Chief hear Dumont. There you go.
I think we got it fixed. Yeah, there was a big sign that showed up on my screen that said unmute now. So, okay. So, so the jail is just we are very active in trying to limit exposure and work through the folks who are positive in the jail. We do have some positive cases in the jail. Currently, we have 6 prisoners. In our facility who have tested positive, and 8 staff members as of this morning. And so we're taking every caution with those individuals and getting them we're monitoring. We have the folks quarantined who are even symptomatic, and they're going through. If a physician says that COVID testing is warranted, then we're certainly getting those tests taken care of. To date, we have 6 prisoners who have tested positive. We have, like I said, 8 staff members who are positive. We think we have a good handle on this. We expect that we'll see more cases in the future, but we're prepared for that, fortunately. So I want to thank some of our partners here today, including the District Attorney's Office, the legal defenders in the courts in helping us clear some bed space, because without the bed space, having those quarantine units just would not have been possible. So thank you all very much for your participation in that. As you can see, I think I saw a slide earlier that showed our our daily population, you can see it's decreased rather dramatically. We're just above between 1,500 and 1,600 prisoners total in our facility. But again, you can see where we were prior to this pandemic, we were up above 2,100. But having, like I said, having those available beds is vital in our actions that were allowing us to take actions and getting people quarantined and isolated when needed. Let's see here. I'm sure a number of people on today have noticed or noted some of the actions that we've taken. We're limiting our visiting dramatically to include, the only visits that are currently allowed are non-contact attorney visits. Personal visits, things like that have been restricted, at least for the near future, as we're working through this. Our phone contract provider has been kind enough to provide 3 free phone calls per week per prisoner. It's important that they're able to maintain ties with their loved ones and friends in the community, and so those are in place and being taken, certainly being used. So in terms of the treatment and quarantine, if someone is showing signs or symptoms, we are getting them into a quarantine situation where they're monitored for a set period of time, and then they're released from the quarantine. In terms of the actions, we know that there are concerns with being in a jail facility with it's a close confined area. And
hey, Matt.
Yes.
Matt, I have a question or a comment. So just so everybody knows that we're currently in litigation, so I'm going to stop Matt there. We have provided the daily stats, and that's all we're going to provide for today. So thanks. Appreciate it.
You are welcome.
Appreciate you, Matt.
Oh, no problem.
We're going to go on to the prosecution, and I know Sim Gill could not be here. So I think Will is attending the meeting. Will, are you there?
I am. I'm here. Thank you very much. The data, again, for very similar reasons to what Sheriff Rivera indicated, we're going to be avoiding some details due to the litigation that's going on. But the data that I can share at this point is that March of this year, we had a 7% increase in the number of cases that were submitted to us for screening as compared to March of 2019. 2019 was not our peak year, so 18 and 17 were both higher. Still, this last March, was the third highest in the last 11 years that we've had for screening. We're continuing to try and balance the interests of public safety and public health in who we ask that warrants be issued for. We have seen an increase in domestic violence cases submitted to us for screening, as well as an increase in the courts declining our warrant requests on domestic violence cases. And that is about all I have that I can share at this stage.
Okay, I don't see any questions. Do you see any questions, Tucker?
Nope, I don't have any questions yet.
Okay, we'll move on to the public defense.
Thank you, Sheriff. We have done a number of things. We've been working in cooperation with a number of people, including the DA and the jail, and we very much appreciate the work that we've done. It hasn't been perfect, but certainly, we've taken a system that has ostensibly been a face-to-face, person-to-person system and made it fully electronic and animated in ways that one could never expect to have been done in 2 weeks. We've also put our staff, much of our staff is remote. We, like the jail and like the prosecutor's office, are essential operations, and we're continuing to do that. We are continuing to work with the DA's office on releases of people from jail. We think that's an important thing right now, particularly given social distancing and the other kinds of factors that go into that. We will continue to work with them. I anticipate the next stage in the process, and I talked to Sim a little bit about this week, is to have hearings on actual people to make other determinations about bail with the hope that more people can be released. I think one of the important things from our perspective on behalf of our clients, their families, jail staff, is to reduce the jail population as much as possible. And I think that's possible. I think we have tools that we are able to utilize to do that, including House Bill 206, which is a bail reform act, and some other things. I hope that we can get more. And certainly that's our intent. And again, I want to give a shout out to Matt and his folks. Lieutenant Warnick and Captain Kittle and Lieutenant Sperry, Sergeant Oliveo. They've been really good to work with, and they've helped us. They've put some additional phones in that give us access to our clients. They've put phones in the pods for the court hearings. It's been very helpful to us, and that's our aspirational goal. Our big challenge for us right now is people that are getting released and transitioning them from jail into some sort of community placement. I want to give a shout out to our social services department. They've been working overtime at finding some places for people to go in some pretty challenging times. I mean, there are a number of people in the jail that have tested positive for COVID-19. And there are people in the community that, you know, the programs right now have put a little bit of a hiatus on some things, although they are working very vigorously to be able to accept people. And our challenge, because it's an important challenge for us, is to figure out the best way to transition people that may be homeless, that may be suffering from mental illness, that may have continued drug addictions, is to try to transition them from the jail into a community placement or a community setting. And there are some challenges, and our folks have really stepped up and really found some creative placements for people. And so I wanna, again, thank everyone for assisting in that endeavor. Our next decision, and you know, as Will mentioned, what we're seeing is an increase in domestic violence cases, is really to have a discussion either with the court, with the prosecutors, or both, to talk about release, because I think we are likely to see an increase in that area of event. And I think we probably need to have some discussions about how we want to treat those cases and how we want to handle those. I suspect that at some point we need to try to make a determination about what public safety looks like in light of the number of those cases where people may be booked into jail. The next step in our process is really an interesting one from a court and due process perspective, and that is, what can we do on video? We've gone now to almost 100% court video, and it seems to be working pretty well, but I think we'll have continuing discussions as we evolve through that process to decide what hearings can we do, what kind of substantive things are important that can be done on video. What kind of things need to be continued until June, July, August, September, whenever we're out of this quarantine that we're in. So that's the next step in our process. But again, it actually is working lots better than I thought it would. And I do want to thank everybody for their cooperation and help in this endeavor.
Well, thank you, Rich. And we also want to say thank you to your folks, too, for we have such a great relationship with the LDAs in the jail. Next, Pam, do you, Vickery, have anything to go with this line item?
We've been working with Juvenile Justice Services to try and make sure that any kids that are getting booked in that can be released immediately or getting considered for that. We've developed an expedited screening process for kids that would normally come in and because of a warrant or something like that, not be releasable. And so they have a system set up for immediate review of that to see if there isn't a way to look at release. We're struggling, I think, with some of the same things that Rich talked about, that while the hearings have gone better than I think people thought, we have struggled in the juvenile court system with the phone conferencing because other people can listen in on the hearings, and with the confidentiality of juvenile court, that's been a problem. But I think as we move to the video conferencing, that should get better. I think the big thing for us is what types of hearings, as like Rich was talking about, can be done as we move forward, because it's really difficult to have those types of conversations with kids and track them down ahead of time of before the court hearings and not doing it face to face. We've been managing, we've been able to set up like go-to meetings with some of the kids, FaceTime with a lot of them and things like that. But just trying to figure out how to best gauge interacting with young people and representing them and making sure that they're understanding what's going on in a situation where you're not able to be there in person and read body language and get immediate feedback. And that's really, for the most part, the update. The numbers for detention are down, which is good. And I think that the numbers, they have about 100 kids on home detention statewide, and I think about 50 in detention statewide. And the numbers for Salt Lake County are down, and also the numbers for secure care are coming down slightly.
Okay, do we have any questions for Pam?
Sheriff, I don't see any questions, and none have been texted to me. So I think we're, no questions, I don't think so.
Okay, we'll move on to district court. Judge Corus.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, okay. This is Corus. Actually, from the district court perspective here, I couldn't imagine that this could have worked better. I mean, given the circumstance, obviously the best case scenario is for us not to be here, but we are here. So we took, according to my IT people at least, we took a program that they think would have taken on the minimum of 6 months to put in place. And particularly with regard to the sheriff, the legal defender, and the prosecutors, we've been able to put it together literally in about a week. I want to thank very, very much Chief Dumont. He has been absolutely unbelievable. Lieutenant Warnick has been unbelievable. Captain Kittle's been unbelievable. When we have an idea or they have an idea, they text me, we talk about it, and generally by the next day it's been put in place. And that is unbelievably helpful. I have to tell you, just for the hell of it, the record so far, just so you know, is Judge Mao had a hearing this week that involved 4 different jails, 10 different defense lawyers, all from different sites, the DA's office, and it actually went very well. So that's kind of where we've gotten at this point, which is fantastic. And I have a little bit of disagreement with Rich, and he knows I do, and that is, I honestly think with what we have right now, we can do everything. I think we can do everything short of a jury trial. I think all of those hearings have and will continue to be done with regard to preliminary hearings, et cetera, in terms of transporting witnesses and victims or whatever to wherever they need to go. I think that's gonna work out perfectly. And I'm encouraged to see it happen on occasion. Obviously a jury trial is something that I can't even envision happening now. And I don't know when that's going to change. The last thing I want to talk about, and I actually have a note here to call the chief this morning, and maybe I could talk about with him here if I could steal 2 minutes. Chief, the one issue that I've had, and Rich didn't bring it up, but the one issue that has been brought to my attention is that a number of legal defenders are finding the need to go down to the jail. And I understand that that's allowed in a no contact setting, but a number of legal defenders are home because they themselves are in quarantine and shouldn't be leaving the house. And what we would like to do is set something up maybe ahead of time where they could talk to their attorneys. One idea that a few of Rich's folks have suggested to me is to give them messages to call their lawyers so at least they can get in touch with them. Another might be the rooms that are now, they have 4 phone lines going into some of these rooms. If, for instance, the participants in the next day's calendar are brought down maybe the day before and allowed to go into that room and have all 4 of those phones working and have their defense lawyers there talking to them from their homes. And then the following day when they get in front of the judge, obviously they would have talked to the person and we would be able to move the case much quicker. Obviously, we want to be as efficient as we possibly can, given the system that we've currently set up. And I think for the most part, that's happening. So at any rate, that's my suggestion. I was going to call I talked to the lieutenant this morning, and he indicated that this was a problem that unfortunately falls on the chief's desk, which I'm sure the chief is used to that at this point. But at any rate, chief, if you have an opportunity, or maybe we can talk for a minute after this and talk about maybe some way to make that better. Or Rich, if you have another idea, I'm certainly open to that as well. But otherwise, everything is working fine with the court system.
So, Judge, I will tell you that I had a discussion with Lieutenant Warnick last night about this very topic. And we have a couple of ideas. Part of that will be dependent upon staff, but we've reached sort of we've had a discussion about whether we could send a list to the jail with set times for clients to call. We think that might work, and it would be sufficiently in advance of the hearing so that we could assure that there was communication between client and lawyer with a designated list. They have to kind of work out some of the issues in housing, and that's something that we're working on. And I'll keep you updated if I hear more about that today.
All right. Well, if you're pursuing that, then I won't. I didn't realize. I got two calls yesterday and the day before from attorneys that were forced to go down to the jail. And I thought, in this environment, I particularly now that the jail has some positive tests, I'm sure that's as hard on the jail as it is on anyone to have visitors come down there. So as a result, it sounds like this should work out fine, and your folks should be able to get in and talk to them. The other thing that that Captain Kittle has spoken with me about is setting up a very special calendar, and these are people that are actually in quarantine. And maybe we'd do that once a week. We'd get a list of the folks that are in there. We can find out what judges they're in front of, and maybe have that calendar on a Wednesday for 2 hours or something, and make sure the attorneys are looped in as well to make sure those cases as well. I don't want, obviously the biggest fear for me is for these cases to languish because the person is, caught in this situation. There's an awful lot of rights implicated when a person is locked in a cement cell. But that said, this is a extraordinary circumstance, so we just really have to do the best we can.
Your Honor, I would like to just add, so we do have that messaging in place. And so if our transportation clerks are taking those requests for prisoners to contact their attorneys there's a rough time frame on a specific date. So we've got the plan in place. And what we'll do from our end is assure that we're communicating with the legal defenders and other groups so they know exactly what that process is.
Thank you very, very much, Chief.
Hey, any more questions on that? Okay, we'll move to, let's see, we're in justice court now.
So. Of course we are.
Actually, I think I do see a question right here from Kim Cordova. It says, does all of this include private counsel?
The answer to that is absolutely it does. And as a matter of fact, what we're doing is when we set the hearings, I have my clerks go through the calendar and figure out what lawyers need to be on what cases. And then we send invitations to the legal defenders that happen to be on that calendar, as well if there are any private counsel that also need to be in that calendar. They are also invited via WebEx. And at least I can tell you in my personal experience, the last calendar I had, I believe, three private lawyers, and they just called in from their office. We haven't had a situation yet where they've been unable to do that. And even if they don't have a computer that's equipped with a camera and a microphone, the system is set up in such a way that they can do it just through a regular telephone. And that information is sent to them along with the invitation to attend the hearing. So in response to your question, the answer is absolutely yes.
Great, thank you. All right, yeah, I think that's all the questions I see then, Sheriff.
Okay, let's go to Justice Court. Do we have anybody? Well, I'm sure.
Yeah,
I think we do.
Thanks. Thanks, Sheriff. This is Judge McCullough, and then after I'm going to go over kind of what we're doing countywide and district-wide, then I'm going to give to Judge Landau for a couple minutes for the kind of just to highlight some of the really interesting things those guys are doing over there in Salt Lake, trying to keep that court, which is probably the second busiest court in the state after the Matheson Courthouse, up and going and being responsive to what people need from us. So as soon as this happened, we got everybody kind of hunkered down, trying to make sure that people have access to their courts. We got all of our courts on an amended video schedule because now the district courts decided that video is an important tool that they need to use. We thank them for joining us in that after all these years. We've even doubled up some of our courts. What we found is sometimes the most important thing we've got is a defense attorney, and some of our different courts share defense counsel. So if I can have three different courts on with one set of defense counsel talking to their clients, that works pretty well. Along those lines, Mark, if we do get a quarantine schedule going, we have a couple of defendants who are in quarantine, and I'm sure Judge Landau in Salt Lake City does too. To the extent if we set up a quarantine calendar where we're kind of getting a 2-hour time window to talk to these guys and resolve their cases, let us think about getting involved with that, because we would only need maybe 5 minutes of the total time. But like you said, I want to try to get these cases resolved as much as we can. And we can put as many judges on a WebEx as we need to and just have them drop out serially or drop in serially if we need to. We're addressing, at least in West Valley, we're addressing the DV cases. Those are by far the most serious and troubling trend we have, is the increase in DV cases, as people who don't necessarily like spending a lot of time together are now having to spend time together. What we've done in West Valley is we're treating as exigent anything in which the city's identified that they want a continuing pretrial protective order in place. If they don't, then it's going on our "we will get to these when we resume business" calendars. But the ones we are focusing on in the very short term are the ones where they want a protective order. We're asking them to identify for us on the informations. So I know, Will, you're having some issues with the district court identifying which ones you want warrants on. Well, what we're asking our prosecutors to do is identify for us the cases in which they're looking for a pretrial protective order at the outset are the ones that we're going to handle as quickly as we possibly can. Other than that, then I think where we're going to start going with our courts is we're going to try to get a system set up where we can handle, before we can get back to business, and we hope June, where we can start getting the cases that people want to work on. We're going to set up, we've just about got it set up that you can request the appointment of counsel for new cases. So the case is in the system, but you haven't been arraigned yet, and you won't be arraigned until June. But you can request the appointment of counsel at this point, provide us the data we would need to have to do that, then we can get counsel appointed and get in, especially indigent counsel and the prosecutors working together to get those cases resolved, or at least moved along a little bit. If we need to have suppression hearings, we can start to get those things set up rather than just waiting for a tsunami of caseloads to start in June. And that's pretty much the stuff I've wanted to say. Again, I'm just going to echo it. Kittle and the rest of the crowd, or like at the jail, have been awesome to work with, and responsive. We've been using a tool. JoJo helped set us up. JoJo and Tucker, shout out to the we've got a new case management tool. We've sent it around to the district court and to LDA that gives you a sense for every case hold that's going on at the jail at the moment. And helping us figure out who's there so we can reduce our commitments down as much as possible. I guess my one question for Will, if you know, is one of the things I'd heard, one of the things being talked about with respect to the call for the special session will be a talk about a good time increase or benefit. Have you heard more about that?
I've not heard that as a specific legislative proposal for next. I think it's going to be next week's special session.
Okay. But I mean, to me, that's a better population management tool than just kind of willy-nilly. It would also seem to me that it would give the chiefs and the people who are running the jails the potential to keep a population management tool that is useful and keep in effect. But We're working with everybody else, putting out fires. Most of them, things are quiet and settled, and trying to handle cases as they come in as best we can. And then with that, I'll give it to Judge Landau, because again, I think Salt Lake City's been doing some absolutely wonderful things, and some of the innovations those guys have been coming up with.
Yeah, I can pick it up. This is Clem. First of all, I hope everyone's well and healthy. We had the good fortune of having a pretty comprehensive joint agency meeting, I think a day before Rudy Gobert was diagnosed. So we had a 3-hour meeting. Rich was there, and we kind of went through everything that we would do in the event this got worse in a couple of weeks. And then lo and behold, within 24 hours, it was a lot worse, and we had to scramble to put everything in place. And I think the thing that we've been really focused on is being very clear with our message.
Did we lose the judge?
Yeah, I'm looking through. I think they've actually left. I think they dropped off the room altogether, actually.
Mucker, we're back.
Oh, there you are. Okay. They're back.
Okay, continue.
I'm going to blame it on my wife's computer. And there was a phase in which I think every weekend we were getting a new order, either from Chief Justice Durant or from the county or from the governor, that we had to respond to. And we're through that now. So I think we're down to basically our mobile courtroom that's parked out front. And the building is closed to the public. We only have about 2 or 3 people in there at any one time doing the critical things like opening mail that's sat for a good amount of time and answering phones that can't be transferred out. So it's been largely quiet for the last week or so. We're just kind of settled into our new normal. And we're starting to think about what to do about the backlog. We know that traffic cases, new ones, are almost gone away completely, but misdemeanors have only gone down slightly because I think there has been an increase. And I think from looking at jurisdictions around the country, we can expect to see an increase in petty crime. And then if and when the public health orders are being enforced, those charges would all likely be filed with justice courts, not with district courts. So we just need to be ready for all of that. And we feel like after 4 weeks of scrambling, we finally are. If I don't think I have much else to say. If anyone has any questions about anything we're doing, I'd be happy to answer those.
I just have a curiosity question, Jim Bradley. The mobile courthouse, how do you utilize that?
So we always have a number of cases that we can't see on WebEx. People don't have WebEx. And so we have to leave them on in person, especially if, like Will said, we want to keep issuing bench warrants on these important cases. So what we have is just a single judge out in that unit. It's a very old unit, so it doesn't have connectivity. So we have a hotspot from Verizon that we have in there. So she's up on WebEx. She's got the prosecutor and LDA, and they go through their calendars. There's a whiteboard, and they put everyone's status outside the courtroom. Everyone's standing at quite a distance, and we call the case when it's ready. And that person, there's an X marks the spot where you can peer into the courtroom, but you're well beyond 6 feet away from Judge Robison, who's been the presiding judge over that mobile unit. And so we can go through and do those 6 to 10 cases we have left on the calendar every morning. We have a kind of a phone on a stand that we can pass around if someone needs to talk to their public defender. There's always one on call, and we can just call that person and hand them basically what looks like a music stand and ask them to just touch the stand part. And we always clean that so that they can actually talk to their public defender. And then when we're ready, they can come back to the mobile unit and we can call the case. And, you know, often it is protective orders or other things that we need to do for public safety reasons. And we can put all those things in place and send them on their way.
All right, well, thank you.
It's worked well. It's one of those things where everything that we've done in the last 4 weeks, we had planned to do at some point. So we talked a bunch about having a mobile court for the homeless community. We talked a bunch about having social media pages just so that we can get messaging out to the community. We did that. And so, and we talked a bunch about having people work remotely. We just didn't envision having to do that all of those projects within a span of 4 weeks, but it's worked surprisingly well because we have such amazing partners.
Well, I would agree to that. We do have a great group of partners. So are there any more comments or questions for anyone?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
This is Senator Main. This is Senator Main. How are you? I'm just listening. The question I have, there's been particularly one judge that said something about legislative benefits, or can you, I've got a phone call to the president in about an hour with suggestions and things that we're going to talk about. What were you referring to that legislatively can be fixed? I think it was one of the judges who spoke to that.
Senator, that was me. It was Judge McCullough. It was more of a question, policy-related question. Again, we as judges, as you well know, we don't do policy. We just implement what gets passed by other people. My question was whether Will Carlson, who was with the DA's office, who heads up the district attorney's office legislative team, had heard about a question that was going to be on with respect to the call, or what was going to be on the special session call. That was all I was asking, not about whether it would be a good idea or anything else. I'm not getting outside of my rodeo.
What a wise guy, you know. I can tell you we have 9 subjects that we're working on, and collectively as time goes on, you'll see the product of that. Will's there, and I'm sure he's hooked up maybe better than I if the concerns of one of those committees. Will, have you worked with any of those committees?
I have. I've been in conversation and working with the Association of Counties on the list of priorities. Okay. From the Association of Counties, none of their priorities include specifically what Judge McCullough had asked about, and that was giving credit essentially for time served on sentences for those who had served a majority of their sentence legislatively. In the history, that's been something that's mostly in the purview of the jails. Or the Board of Pardons to address.
Okay, is there anything that when I speak to him, because the conversation is going to be about what we're going to be putting on the call, there's something I should bring up to him, or it's gone through your committee, you're satisfied with that, or?
The request that's being submitted by the Association of Counties, we'd love to see that supported, but that has already been sent to the president.
Yeah.
Beyond that, we don't have any specific requests at this point.
Okay, so I could speak to that I support that? You're good with that?
We would love to have your support, Senator.
Okay, that's what I'm just, because it's good that I'm just joining you today, because I will have conversation in about an hour with him, and that's the conversation of what we want to be on the call. And if you're fine with that, then we can add from our caucus and my support to that. So thanks. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Senator, this is Curris calling. If I may ask you a question, if it's not too far out of line, if I am, you can tell me that I'm out of bounds.
You want to wash my windows?
I'll wash your windows.
That'll be my lawn. Yeah, well, we're good.
Okay. My question to you is there anything that you're aware of that's on the docket for this upcoming session or your phone call with the president coming up that involves the issue of evictions?
That's, as you know, from my caucus, I think you've seen the letter we sent to the governor. We made that public. Uh-huh. And so our caucus is very much supporting those issues. The president's well aware of that. And I think I can't speak to what's going to be on it or what's not, but, I hope you've read the letter we sent from our caucus to the governor and to leaderships in both chambers. So that's high on our priority. And so we hope that comes to be. I think that'll be addressed somewhere, sometime. And we're going to probably have, you know, I'm speaking just my opinion, but we probably will have there'll be a certain amount of things on the first call, and I think you will see more special sessions to come, because as you, it's a new world for all of us, and so things are popping up that we have to fix. Some things can be fixed by the governor, by a wave, some can be fixed internally, some things that we have to go into session to fix. And I think some of those things, it's like an hour by hour, we thought we can fix it, now we have to do that. But you're going to, in my opinion, you will see more special sessions needing to be fixed. But I think the first one will be, that will be, I think just, I would imagine, some budgetary things. And I think you're going to see those structure things that we need to handle. I think those are the ones we're going to see. But I do not know the call. But I know that leadership, I'm speaking with the president today, and other leaderships are meeting all the time. But we have 9 committees that are functioning in the legislature, and you know, groups or whatever getting together to have you know, conversation about a right about that. And that doesn't mean there'll be 9 subjects. That just means that there's 9 things that we're talking about to make that happen. So that's what I know. I hope that helps. But from our caucus, it's a big deal for us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any other comments or questions?
Well, Sheriff, this is Bradley. Are we really on our own for lunch?
Well, I guess so. The county didn't pony up.
Got used to being fed there, but all right.
That's why we turned our cameras off, Jim. We all had lunch except for you.
Okay, so are there any additional members that want to update us on anything?
No.
Well, I think we're done then. So I just want to have a wonderful day.
All right. Take care.
Thank you.